from KQED.
And this is Michael Krasny in San Francisco. The forum program preempted by President Obama making a statement about the nation's finances just a day after he signed a debt ceiling bill suspending the nation's borrowing limit until May 18th. If you heard the president's remarks and the analysis offered by National Public Radio correspondents and reporters, you may indeed want to comment and let us know what you think. I'm going to open the phone lines now. We're going to also talk with Lisa Lehrer, a White House reporter with Bloomberg News, but we would like to hear from you. And if you have reactions, let's hear them. In fact, our toll-free number is available now, and you can join us at that number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your contributions to the ongoing conversation about what to do about the nation's finances and what the president had to say about them today. Again, our toll-free number available, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or register your thoughts and any questions and comments you might have by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. You can also tweet us, our Twitter handle, @KQED Forum, or you can go to our Facebook page. The president began by talking about the economy being on the upswing, but saying that there's political dysfunction, which is interfering with the economy continue to move forward, and it's probably not at all coincidental that this was delivered at the same time that the Congressional Budget Office released its annual economic report and its latest projection on the country's deficit. The president said that deep cuts will slow down recovery and lose jobs, and therefore his message was growth. We have to keep on growing. A balanced approach is what he kept referring to, and a balanced approach essentially means, moving around the sequester with perhaps a smaller package. In fact, President Obama is actually asking Congress to come up with tens of billions of dollars in short-term spending cuts and tax revenue to delay automatic spending cuts, which would kick in the 1st of March. And he said he still believes the nation should move forward with a broad package for both tax reform and spending cuts. He talked a lot about tax loopholes, and certainly, as we heard from our own Tamara Keith, sometimes a loophole, one person's loophole is another person's tax cut. But how is this going to go over, particularly with the GOP and even with Democrats, when he talks about perhaps taking money from entitlements? That doesn't necessarily sit well with those in his own party. We thought we would go to Washington and go to White House reporter Lisa Lehrer. We're going to get your responses, but Lisa Lehrer is with Bloomberg News. And Lisa, good to have you back on Forum. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Well, I guess the initial question is, how is this going to be viewed from both parts of the political aisle, particularly from the far right, which probably is allowing this sequester to happen, as we heard, and is not necessarily going to be up for compromise, but also from the Democrats when the president starts talking about cutting back on Social Security and Medicare?
Well, this is something that Democratic leadership, at least in Congress, has been advocating for. They've been saying that they would like to have a smaller package of cuts, and the sense is from them that there's just really no way that Congress will be able to get the type of deal necessary to postpone the larger sequester cuts, the $1.2 trillion and across the board cuts. So it's better off to go for something smaller and not risk the harm on the economy. But you make a good point. Some of these cuts are going to be politically difficult. On the Republican side, the issue, of course, isn't the cuts, but is the issue of that the president talked about a balanced approach. So what that means is that the White House and many Democrats don't want to cut spending without having some sort of tax cuts. And while the president has said that that's probably not going to be raising rates, he wants to do what they call closed loopholes. So, you know, cut special tax breaks for various industries. One popular, or not so popular one with the public, but popular within the Wall Street community is a special carried interest break, which allows hedge fund and private equity managers to pay 15% on their income into capital gains rate instead of 35%. So things like that. Republicans don't want to see any of those tax cuts. They would just like to do, spending cuts.
Well,
so that's going to be the fight in Congress.
They would like new tax breaks.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And they want to lower the tax rates. And there's also really some serious contention here, or is going to be, one can imagine, and one can almost predict, in terms of how to reduce the deficit and what ways to reduce the deficit.
Right. There's also going to be some fights, of course, about the type of cuts that go into effect. The big issue with the sequester that has really stolen the attention has been the spending cuts. I think it would cut the Pentagon's budget by about 7%, and many Republicans, although they want spending cuts, particularly those in districts that have a lot of military presence, like in Virginia, which I point out because, of course, it's a key swing state, are really concerned about that, and they don't want to see cuts come from defense spending. Of course, Democrats don't want to see cuts come from social programs and things like Medicaid. So it's going to be quite the battle.
Well, and the president kept sort of striking a note of balanced approach, loopholes and deductions to pay down the deficit was pretty much a reduce the deficit. What he was saying would be in order here for a balanced approach. He also said that these proposals, are still on the table, and they have been on the table. And he had discussions with House Speaker Boehner late last year about the so-called fiscal cliff. Those were on the table then, and they're still on the table. And this is a message, presumably, to the Republicans that we can move forward. What's your sense of how they're going to respond?
Well, I think the president he doesn't want to be seen as someone who cut off the negotiations, right? So he wants to say, he wants to at least project the image of being willing to negotiate the grand bargain, the big comprehensive deal that they were talking about last year that would include taxes and spending and deficit and all this stuff wrapped into one big package. But I think White House officials, and I would guess the president himself, recognizes that that's pretty unlikely to happen, given the battle that they had just at the end of last year over, series of things that were set to go, the series of tax increases and spending cuts that were set to go in at the beginning of January. It just doesn't seem that the momentum is there to get a really big deal. So he doesn't want to make it seem that he's taking that idea off the table. He doesn't want to be the one. The president doesn't want to be the one to do that. But I think there's a recognition on both sides that getting that kind of deal is pretty unlikely given the political climate.
Well, and those on the far right or the Tea Party congressional representatives and so forth feel that they already made a compromise. They're expecting the sequester to stay.
Right, and some of them would like the sequester to stay. I mean, the politics of all this is really fascinating, right? Because on all these issues, not just spending, but also immigration, guns, you have a national Republican Party that is still sort of reeling from their losses in the presidential election and wants to strike a more moderate tone on some of these things. Particularly immigration stands out because they want to woo Latino voters. But then you have a Republican-controlled House, and a lot of those districts in that House are configured in such a way that they're pretty strong. They're pretty strongly Republican districts, and they really have like a lot of voters that are sort of the base Republican voters, and they don't necessarily want to strike a deal on immigration, and they want the sequester to go in effect because it would be, a lot of spending cuts, and that's what they want to see. So you have within the Republican Party this tension between what many Republican leaders think is best for the national party and what all these individual House members think that they were elected to do.
We're talking to Lisa Lehrer, who is White House reporter of the Bloomberg News. She is in the nation's capital. And in fact, Lisa, I'm looking at an email here from one of our listeners, David, who says, let's keep the sequester. It's our only hope of cutting the bloated military budget. Well, the Republicans aren't necessarily too happy about those defense cuts.
Right. Republicans are not too happy about the defense cuts. And there is a real concern amongst analysts and economists that the sequester could hurt the economy. The economy is sort of beginning to make a rebound, and it advanced at 3.1% in the third quarter, but it stalled, a bit in the final 3 months of the year because of the lower defense spending. So there is some concern in the economics community and in the White House and in Congress that the sequester could sort of cut into this fragile rebound that we're seeing.
Well, and of course, we have to wait to see the budget unveiled and what that includes, though President Obama is not placing a time span on a dollar amount on the short-term plan. Officials say he'll leave that to Congress. Let me bring some of your calls in here, and we'll go first to you. Diana, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Did I hear President Obama correctly when he said that they would not keep the Social Security wage up with inflation, that they're going to cut back on that? It's already, that's the question. Did I hear that correctly, that they're going to cut back on how much the Social Security is lined up with the inflation rate?
Is that what she heard, Lisa Lehrer?
That is something that the president has and White House officials have talked about as a potential point of compromise with Republicans. That changing the chain CPI, which is how you calculate Social Security in terms of inflation.
Let me thank the caller, and we're going to go to more of your calls here. If you have some reactions to the president's speech, or if you want to join in the conversation, again, our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius. It's 866-733-6786, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And John emails, no one has yet said that many Republicans are primarily interested in shrinking government until it can be drowned in a bathtub. That does not bode well for some kind of major compromise deal. Well, I mean, there's no way around the politics in this, and we've been talking about that from the beginning here, Lisa. But the president has reached out a number of times, and I guess he's trying to do that again, isn't he?
He is trying to do that again, but he's reaching out, but he definitely was drawing some limits there. And I think the balanced approach was really him drawing a line in the sand and saying, saying that that's an area that he won't compromise on with Republicans. And that's really going to be the toughest thing here. And I think what everyone's going to be waiting to see is if it comes down to the wire, as we've seen these things do again and again and again, they always seem to come down to midnight on the last day of the deadline. Does the president accept a package that is just spending cuts in return for not having the full $1.2 trillion of sequester cuts go into effect? Or does he have that full sequester go into effect if he can't get a package that includes some type of tax revenue increase?
Well, he's also got the American people to convince here. And I think when he's talking about these cuts costing hundreds of thousands of jobs because of government agencies and contractors shrinking spending and payrolls, that certainly has its impact.
Yeah, I think one of the most interesting shifts that we've seen, and granted it's from the White House, and granted it's still very, very early in the second term, right? Are we even I don't think we're even a month in, are we? But one of the most interesting
A month in, but nevertheless to a lame duck term.
Right, a month into a lame duck term. But one thing that we've seen the White House do is they've really been pursuing an outside-in strategy. So on immigration, they've been trying to, you know, rally the public, rally Latino voters in particular, and get them to pressure Congress to get a deal, but sort of step back and allow Congress to handle a lot of the negotiations, which is what's happening now. Congress is trying to come out with immigration legislation. On guns, it's been much the same thing. The president was just in Minnesota yesterday trying to rally the public to push for stricter gun controls, but they haven't been that involved in drafting the legislation. They set some broad principles down, and I wouldn't be surprised if we see the same thing happen with this sequester. There are no plans as of now for the president to travel to military bases or anywhere like that, but I certainly would expect him to travel to places like military bases, maybe schools that would be, you know, teachers could be impacted by these spending reductions, and try to rally the public to, press upon the public how much the White House feels these cuts would hurt the economy and get people agitated about them, so they pressure Congress to accept a smaller package.
And Lisa Lehrer with us from Washington, White House reporter for Bloomberg News. Let me get John on here. John, join us.
Good morning. Thanks. I'm just curious. Thank you to your guest for raising the question of the capital gains tax rate. That's one thing I wanted to mention. There seems to be just this acceptance that the money that you earn capital gains on has been taxed already, and so it's entitled to a differential rate. And my point is that if you're a plumber and you buy a wrench, or if you're any person that has ordinary income, that's an investment in your particular profession. And yet every penny that plumber earns with that wrench is taxed as normal income. If capital gains were treated as normal, ordinary income, it would completely change this discussion.
Yeah, I think it's a point well taken, and I want to remind listeners that Lisa Lehrer is with us. You're listening to Forum, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, please go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Do you want to respond to the last call, Lisa?
Yeah, I think what the caller was referring to was the so-called carried interest loophole. And this is a part of the tax code that allows mostly financial people, but some other people in partnerships, but it's really the biggest benefit to hedge fund managers and private equity managers to treat some of the income that they earn from their investments as capital gains, which means that it's taxed at 15%, which is the capital gains rate, rather than 35%, which is the ordinary income rate that many of these people who are quite wealthy would pay. That's that's something that, you know, a lot of Democrats are particularly outraged about, and something that voters have become a little bit outraged about, in part because it was a topic in the presidential election, because, of course, Republican Mitt Romney was a private equity manager. I think there is some realization, even among the private equity community, even among the folks I talk to, you know, executives and lobbyists, that loophole is likely to be closed. It's considered something that's pretty easy pickings for, you know, in this political climate where they're really both sides, well, Democrats certainly and some Republicans are looking for ways to increase revenue, that's probably not going to survive.
And Bob, let's go to you. Thanks for waiting. Join us on Forum. You're on.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. You know, here in Silicon Valley, we have taken severe hits to our income during these very difficult times. Most of us by just drops in our income, our wages. We've been asked to do that, even to the highest levels of many, many companies. I haven't seen that in Washington, D.C. I haven't seen that happening to federal employees. I know they do get rid of, they do eliminate additional hires. They do eliminate some of the lower-end employees, but they keep the higher, more expensive ones, and I don't see them cutting their salaries. That would be a big thing. And the other thing is, if you take a look at the word entitlements in Wikipedia or anywhere else, you'll find that the very benefits that the government employees are getting are, in fact, entitlements by the very definition. You take a look at how much they contribute. You take a look at how much is contributed by government. And the bottom line is it's an entitlement. And the contributions that government employees make is much smaller, even today, as they're starting to make such contributions, than the rest of the world has done through Social Security or 401Ks. As a matter of fact, the very government that wants to make cuts is the one that started to allow us to have our retirement accounts by allowing us to invest maybe 30, 40 years ago a measly $1,500, and I think it's now up to $5,000 or $6,000. And I do know there's 401Ks and other things that are larger.
All right, Bob, I appreciate those comments. We'll let them stand because I want to get as many callers on here in the time remaining as I can. And we'll go to Berkeley and welcome David. Good morning.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just want to make the point that this sequester is it's a man-made phenomenon. It's an agreement that has been made that can be tabled, that can be dissolved. It's not a force of nature. And a big piece of that is that I think it's overlooked in the discussion, is that it's a piece of a longer game that the right wing is playing in this country. And then, you know, around the world, essentially, it's part of the, you know, what I think is the shock doctrine. Basically, it forces us to move from one crisis to another. And because everyone's attention is on the crisis, there are other significant things that get overlooked. You know, for example, if you'd like to talk to Paul Krugman, listen to Paul Krugman, I should say, you know, unemployment is completely off the table here. You know, it's not being talked about at all, only vis-a-vis, I guess, in this case with the sequester, the defense cuts, when suddenly the right-wingers become, you know, Keynesians, like Krugman says.
David, let me jump in here because I think, Lisa Laird, David's point is well taken in terms of a kind of dichotomy between those who are looking to make the economy more lively by spending and creating jobs, however that can be done, and keeping jobs, and the austerity folks. Cut, cut, cut.
Yeah, I mean, that is part of the divide here in Washington, but there's this also, you know, I don't think anyone wants the economy to be worse, right? Everyone, I think people on both sides were happy to see the Congressional Budget Office release, you know, the revised budget projections this year, showing that the deficit dropped below $1 trillion for the first time in Obama's presidency. The question is how you improve the deficit, and that really speaks to a philosophical difference between the two parties.
Yeah, indeed it does. And Lisa Laird, so good to have you with us. Thank you for your excellent analysis. Lisa Laird with us from Washington is White House reporter for Bloomberg News. And we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. We have production assistance from Tina Larberg. And our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Mark. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.